The Christmas Promise. What do we live for, if not to make the world a less difficult place for each other? George Eliot. Prologue. Present day. A fresh blanket of snow fell last night. Sparkling white mounds sit on top of the shrubs outside my kitchen window. I fall into a chair at the table and pour cream into my coffee. My friend Jack is working on a car in my driveway. I can see his breath in the air. I haven't known Jack long, only a year. The Year of Wonders, I call it. I'm still trying to piece the year together, but I don't think I ever will. Maybe I'm not supposed to. That's the beauty of the mystery. When I was a young mother in Georgia, I loved to see the Christmas season begin. The day after Thanksgiving, I'd put in my favorite cassette of songs with Bing Crosby, Rosemary Clooney, and Burl Ives, and the sounds of Christmas would fill our home as I hauled down the wooden nativity set from the attic along with a battered fake tree. My children and husband and I would decorate it, and by the time we were finished, it was always icicle-heavy and bulb poor. But we took pictures as if the tree were standing on the White House lawn. One winter, my youngest son Matthew pressed his nose to the living room window and watched the snow fall, covering our lawn. "Now it's Christmas," he had said. "Snow doesn't make Christmas," I had said. "There are lots of states and countries that never see a flake of snow. It's the promise of Christmas that makes Christmas what it is." Matthew watched the snow cover the grass.
"Promise of what?"
I sat on the floor next to him. "Well, it's the promise of love and grace. Grace was given to us at Christmas. That's the biggest promise of all." My husband Walt thought it would be an adventure if the family trekked out to cut down our own tree that year. We bundled up the kids and drove to a friend's farm where Walt led us through what felt like miles of pasture land before we arrived at a small thicket of woods. My son Daniel spotted the perfect tree, and Walt whacked at the bottom branches so he could get a clear shot at the trunk. Walt hadn't thought about sharpening the axe before we left that morning, and after several whacks, he was tired and leaning up against the tree to catch his breath. Each of our children attempted to carve away at the tree, but of course they were all too small to do much damage. Walt was angry with himself for not sharpening the axe. Though I tried to stifle my laughs, I couldn't. He got down on his belly and was whittling away at the trunk as if with a pocket knife, and I laughed harder as the pine needles poked and jabbed at his face. He kicked at the trunk several times, bouncing off the branches and landing on the ground. The kids began to squeal as they watched him, and soon they were running around the tree giggling and kicking at it. Walt whacked, whittled, and lashed out at that tree until it finally surrendered, and we laughed all the way back over the pasture land to the car.